Cussing makes me feel free. Don't put me in a box. You've been advised. Hey y'all, I'm Jen. I'm from Oakland, and I'm an androgynous, Black lesbian feminist, and a lover of all Black people.
This is Darren. I'm an asexual novelist, researcher, and bona fide comic book fanatic from the whitest part of Southern California.
Orange County. We're queer millennials with three kids and nearly 20 years of marriage.
This is a podcast about the realities of Blackness, adulting, and relationships.
This is That Black Couple. I've actually never heard the song.
Can't even deny it. Every time I try it, one look in my eyes, you know I'm lying.
Wow.
I know all the words.
Oh, I don't know any of the words.
Which is amazing.
I've only seen clips on TikTok, so I don't actually know the song. I don't
you probably haven't heard the whole song.
No, I never have heard the whole song. I've only heard that one part. The part where the guy's dancing and his son comes home from school. That's the only one I know. Because I watched that over and over again.
What TikTok clip is that?
The one I showed you where it was like you and your favorite kid comes home from college.
Oh, yeah.
It's just funny as hell. I love it so much.
The fact that you associate that song with white people is hilarious.
I don't associate it with white people.
You did. You just associated it with a clip of white people.
Because it's so funny. It's so funny. I'm sorry. I think it's really funny. Whatever. Anyway, whatever.
I love that this is how this episode is starting.
Whatever.
I love it.
This is the twin where have you been episode. we really been out here disappeared.
We get a job. You know, it's been a minute. You know, and it's been a time.
Yes.
And there's reasons why we've been gone.
That's what this episode is about. This episode is about, hey, where have you been? That's what we're going to catch all up.
We are going to answer that question
today. We're going to answer that question.
Yes.
Today.
Now, you might know some of why.
Because if you saw some stuff on social media, you might know.
Have a glimpse into what's been going on.
But we're gonna
give you the whole clarification.
We're gonna have all the detail.
Now, what are we drinking today?
Oh my god! Great question. How are you just going? Can I do my intro?
Go ahead. Do it the way you want to do it.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm gonna do it how I want to do it. Thank you. This is episode 3 of season 6 of That Black Couple. So we're going to go back to drinking water because last episode you was flushing out all of 2023. You had to get all that stuff out there.
And you know, when you flush, you gotta hydrate right after.
You gotta replenish. So we're going to pop that water in there.
It's bad if you
don't. Just drink that water. You know what I'm saying? You want to do your body weight. Is it 80% of your body weight? What is it?
Something like that.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whatever, I'm making that shit up probably.
Just drink a lot.
It's like your body weight and a half or something like that. Whatever. Anyway, a lot of water.
A lot.
Based on, you know, what you're supposed to drink. When I'm not high. Okay. Have a seat. This is That Black Couple. I'm Jen.
I'm Darren.
Before we get started, make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at That BLK Couple, on Facebook at That Black Couple, and look us up on the internets at www.thatblackcouple.com.
And you already know. You can find us everywhere. So go find us in all those places. You can find us on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, on Audible, on Jen's favorite platform, Pandora.
Why you do that?
You can.
No, I hate that shit.
I really need to reopen your Pandora account. No. I really need to re-energize it.
They probably got Avril Lavigne in there or something.
They probably do with her weird flappy arm.
Yeah, what's that song?
Why you gotta go? It's so complicated. It's probably in there. See, the joy you have right now, brought to you by Pandora. See,
take what you get and you turn it into.
Look at this. Look, you know all the words to that.
See, just promise me, but you don't. I'm never gonna find you faking. No.
You know all the words to
Avril Lavigne. But I don't know Money Long.
You don't know no Money Long words. No money, nanu, junu,
banu. That's you. Nobody gonna love me like you, but you
You couldn't even get the whole first line correct.
I just sing it with everybody else when the TikTok come on.
Whatever brings you joy. And if listening to our podcast on Pandora brings you joy, listen to our podcast on Pandora. You. Okay. I'm judging you. Wherever podcasts are streamed, you can stream us there.
Judging you.
Okay. Now, let's get this episode going because Jen has been hotboxing me in here. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice.
Stop making that a verb.
I know you can hear it in her voice. But you don't have to bear with us.
Stop making that episode. A verb. It's an enjoyable noun. Mm. Hot box is the thing that you're like, you want to go hot box?
You just use it as a verb.
You're right. You want to go get in the hot box?
Like I said, getting hot boxed in here today, y'all. I'm not mad at it.
Whatever.
Feels good. Whatever. Just saying, you know.
This is, you know what I did? Do you want to know what I did?
Oh, no.
So this is because I took one of my favorites, Afternoon Delight, and then I went in my Keef jar.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. And I got some of my Keef jar, which is a combination of all the weeds I've been smoking over the past, I don't know, 8 months. And I keep it fresh because I use one of those little paper things. And then I just poured some of the Keef jar into the grinder when I made this joint. So I don't know what's in here.
I might be sleeping on this table before the end of this
episode. We just got to make it through the episode and find the bed because I don't know what is in this joint.
That afternoon did not. Ooh, see?
Look at you.
See?
That
afternoon delight on its own
is rough. It's, I know it's,
it can do some things.
And it's, I don't know why they call it afternoon. You just that's a midnight snack.
Call it no. It's afternoon. Like it's for siestas.
No, you know? That needs to happen in the dark of the night when can't nobody see your ass, knock you right out. Midnight snack. That's what it should be called. Shoot. But yeah, there's some stuff from the Keef jar in there. So
okay, that's
there's really no telling.
That must be the notes that I'm experiencing right now.
Those highs and lows and all the colors.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. What are we talking about?
Oh, we're catching y'all up. we're telling y'all where we've been.
You want to start? Segment one?
And I'm gonna start segment one.
First things first.
First things first. Where we been at?
Where we been? We've been there.
First things first.
Yes.
We were contacted by Huffington Post Black Voices.
We were.
And they wanted to do a feature on us.
They did.
Spotlighting who we are, what our relationship is about, all about a series they're doing on Black love.
That's right.
And I want to say we were very, very honored to be included in this. It was amazing.
Yeah.
We actually had the photographers come to our house and take pictures of us, pictures of our kids.
Yep. Our puppy.
The puppy was smizing. Okay.
She was.
She was serving face. She was
face. Serving face. Okay.
She was ready at the appointed time.
Okay? Giving.
And I think the pictures came out amazing. They also did an interview with us. You can read the whole thing at Huffington Post Black Voices. I love how the interview came out. I think we said so many amazing and important things, and I hope that those things were read by people and it changed their minds or it made them feel affirmed.
You high? You gonna tell them what we talked about?
I mean, I don't want to tell y'all the whole article because really, honestly, I don't think I'd do it justice. I think y'all really should read the whole thing.
What's the general subject matter, Darren?
But really, the subject matter is us and how our relationship works. Like, what do y'all do? What is this about? What is it? What does it look like? How does it work? And for you, you know, a non-binary, polyamorous lesbian, right? And for me, cishet, asexual man, people be fucking confused, okay? They really are like, what? Huh?
How?
And one thing I will say is when it came out, I was so excited and I was on such a high. I did the dumbest thing you could ever do. I was like, let me look at the comments.
Bad idea.
Like literally 12 seconds. And then let me see. There's like 10 comments. Let me go see. Oh, this is going to be so cool. And there are so many dusties in there being like, what?
Yeah, I got the title issues. Alone.
I can't. Ooh, you know, so many like just dumb comments. And I said, yep, let me step.
Yeah, don't read the comments.
Right out the comments. But the point is, right, we say a lot of things, I think, for people that have those backgrounds or those identities that I think is really affirming. Number one, that they can see us mm-hmm. and they can see that we're living life on our own terms mm-hmm. and building a relationship and a love that has lasted mm-hmm. a long ass time mm-hmm. Again on our own terms mm-hmm. Meeting our own needs and doing it the way that we want to. And I think also juxtaposing that with, you know, images of our entire family mm-hmm. of our three kids,
our beautiful children.
Honestly, I'm so happy, and I really hope that it fucks some people up in the head. I really hope they saw a picture and like, oh, look at this cute hetero family. They probably go to church on Sundays and have, you know, matching, you know, powder blue outfits. I hope they saw the pictures and then they read and they said, my brain doesn't know what to do with it. So I hope that's what happened for them.
I'm sure it happened. I think a lot of people's brains were broken from that mm-hmm. because we do look like a heteronormative black, you know, aspirant family that's kind of assimilating into the white middle class, and we couldn't be anything further from that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we absolutely fit in the upper middle class because of a tax bracket, you know, that's how it works. We have to work to feed ourselves. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to our politics, how we move in the world, the choices we make, how we raise our children, how our children's politics are manifested and expressed, like nobody in this house is assimilatory at all. Like no one. Everybody is a radical. Everybody's like, fuck the police. Like our kids been on fuck the police since they was like four. Like it's interesting. And I think that it was really nice to have it there in the article because it was all summed up. You know, it was like, oh, wow, I can now just send people here and say, well, here's the story. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you want to know, there you go. And there's our kids and that's our house. And this is how we live our lives. And it's really straightforward for us. And for them, they're like, whoa, how do you do that? Well, we just decided and we respect each other's choices and who each other are. And we believe each other.
It's really not that complex or complicated.
It's not.
But actually, it's very simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope that truth penetrates into people.
Well.
And like I said, changes people's minds and also makes other people feel affirmed. And also, I think for some people to give them hope about, you know, trying to build life and build relationships that fit their own wants and desires and not the desires of the world.
Yeah. I agree. Is it my turn now?
Well, the other thing I want to point out really quickly,
okay,
is remember I had eye surgery.
You did have eye surgery. We talked about
this briefly, right? Yes. So, you know, as an update from episode one, right? I had my eye surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I healed from that.
You did.
Was not even fully healed when we did the photo shoot.
That's correct. That's correct.
But we did it anyway because that is again how we live our lives.
That's correct.
We living on the edge.
That's right.
At every moment.
That's right.
Hanging on a moment with you.
That's right.
And
that's
then,
probably on my Pandora too.
Yeah, I know that's in there.
Yeah, that's my Pandora.
I know that one's in there. And then, you know, we did the Huffington Post thing. Feeling great, man. Super excited. Like, so excited.
Yay.
You know? And then you can say what happened next.
Okay. Okay, well, I was hanging out on my book tour. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Yay, book tour.
Thought I was a grown up and stuff. And eating and stuff, and then ended up in the hospital.
Ooh,
yeah. It was wild. 5 days admitted to SUNY Upstate Medical Center, and an awful experience that I am currently writing about that I don't even really like to talk about because it's mad triggering. But just a lot of medical racism and a lot of kind of just not being listened to and all the stereotypes about people in hospitals dismissing Black women's pain and being less likely to administer pain medications when needed, and, you know, all of that stuff, just actually having to live through that was extremely violent. And, you know, it was awful. That's why the episodes have been delayed.
Been a little bit delayed, y'all.
Been delayed. I had to cancel part of the book tour. And it sent a lot of things into turmoil with my health, and a lot of concern about if I was going to need heart surgery. A whole bunch of things kind of came out of it. Ended up going to a new doctor at Johns Hopkins just this week and getting a different prognosis from this person that made me feel a lot more comfortable with proceeding with all my plans. But it was just a lot of, like, 2 weeks of kind of just like, wow, mm-hmm. like, I don't know what's going on, and being really scared and not having a lot of information, but also having dealt with doctors who were not listening to me. So it was nearly impossible to get the treatment that I needed, and still having not really gotten the treatment that I needed, just trying to make do with what I have, because I just checked myself out. I was like, hey, I'm not staying in this hospital no more. Y'all fucking pissing me off. Like,
we basically diagnosed you ourselves.
Right.
Using the internet.
Right.
We basically have made life adjustments.
Right.
That we researched by ourselves.
Right.
Using the internet.
Right.
To accommodate the fact that you, like you said, have not received the medical treatment that you actually needed from the very beginning. That we said that you needed from the very beginning when we walked in those doors of the hospital. But as you said, that, like, it's really weird, I think, when you are aware of the history of you know, medical mistreatment, basically, mm-hmm. of Black women, mm-hmm. and then you walk into that situation and you're living it.
Right.
At the same time, and you're aware of what's happening.
Right.
And you're saying, hey, this is happening. And even then, nothing. You are stuck.
Right. Powerless. I told them as I was leaving, I was like, y'all made me feel helpless. Like, I don't like that feeling. I don't like feeling powerless and helpless and feeling like I have no role in my own survival, in my own medical care. Like, that is not a feeling that I ever want to have. Helplessness is not a feeling I ever want to have again in my life. And it was one of those situations where it was like, the more I advocated for myself, the more helpless I felt, because the more I realized, oh, they don't care.
Right.
They don't actually care. It doesn't actually matter what I do. They're going to keep being racist. They're going to keep mistreating me. They're going to keep not hearing me. They're going to keep intentionally misunderstanding me. And I'm going to start to look like the fool, because I'm going to look like I'm being aggressive or being forceful, trying to make them hear me. And that's going to put me at a different kind of risk. You know, there were security guards on my floor every single night. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. Like, there's also the policing risk. So then I'm like, okay, well, I have to also be careful, because if I try to assert myself too much, they might arrest me. You know what I'm saying? It was really a lot.
It was really a lot. And I'm going to say, even briefly on my end, as a person who was not hospitalized, it was still a lot for me. There were things that I saw that you didn't see.
Yeah.
That I wish I could unsee as well.
Yeah.
And I say things plural, because it wasn't one. It was multiple things at different stages, at different locations, dealing with different people, where I was just like, I would really love, number one, for me to not have seen this, but also for this thing not to exist. Mm-hmm. Like, just terrible, horrible situations, people in dire straits. And, you know, hats off to people that work in the medical profession, especially people mm-hmm. in hospitals, especially people in ER wards. That is mm-hmm. not a job that I am built to do.
No.
At the same time, I feel like sometimes, you know, like in all professions, there's some people mm-hmm. working jobs they should not be working
mm-hmm.
because, just like me, they are not built for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard to see that in situations dealing with people's lives mm-hmm. and livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm going to say on yep. that.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is supported by generous donations from our patrons and listeners. Become a supporter today by heading to www.patreon.com/othercombosmedia.
You can stream the show on iTunes, Spotify,
Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. When you listen, please consider hitting that heart button, sharing, giving us a 5-star rating, and leaving some dope comments. This helps us with our paid drinkings and gets more listeners for the show. Thank you so much.
We back.
We back.
And it's time for the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is the Where Have You Been episode. Mm-hmm. And we just talked about, you know, what we do with Huffington Post, Black Voices. We talked about the hospitalization. But the thing I also think people need to fully understand is that those things were happening against the backdrop of a book tour.
Correct.
What that means for us, you know, as a family, means usually every week for the weekend, you are gone. You are traveling somewhere. And then you're coming back, and then you're doing your regular, you know, quote unquote, 9-to-5 of teaching college courses and college students, while also preparing and planning and coordinating all of these book tour events. Amongst all the other jobs that you do.
That's right.
And then repeating that process again and being gone the next week.
Correct. Right.
So, as you can imagine, there was a lot going on. And then when you add on, you know, a hospitalization into that, things kind of just
stop.
They stop. And that's where we were.
When Beyonce said, world, stop.
Yep.
It was like that.
Yep. That's what we did. It was just like that for not even just the time you were in the hospital. I think that's the thing you have to think about. It was kind of more like, there was a buffer on either end of that because before you went to the hospital, I was basically caring for you, trying to...
Yep, I wasn't feeling well at all.
Right, for days. Right, so that was like, what, like 3-4 days of that? And then, then the hospital, and then you came home from the hospital.
And I had just traveled before that, so I was gone, and then I came back not feeling well.
Right, so yeah. Like we said, everything stopped. And that's where we've been. But you know, in saying that, I really want you to kind of talk to people about the book tour because you have now restarted the book tour. You got more locations lined up. We got a lot of travel coming up. We're going back to that schedule if you've been gone every weekend.
Correct.
But I think it'll be really cool for people to understand, you know, what that is like for you and also what happens at these events.
Yeah. You want to talk about Ithaca first or you want me to talk about the book tour?
I will talk about my experience at Ithaca, right? Because I did get to go to your first stop when the book actually launched. And we went to a bookstore in Ithaca, and it was...
Buffalo Street Books.
Yeah, Buffalo Street Books in Ithaca, New York. And it was truly an amazing experience. I think it was an amazing experience for everyone in the room for a multitude of reasons. And I think people probably all had their own personal reasons. I think for me, it was really great, number one, to see you kind of at the front of the room and have people asking you questions and you talking about your book and explaining things to people and kind of building that human connection of it all. I think it was also important for people to be seen not just in kind of the content of your book, but even in how the discussions were led, right? Because the discussions were not just like, hey, why did you write this book?
Yeah.
Why did you pick this person? You know, if I want to be a writer, what should I... Like, it was not that type of a discussion. It was a very deep, thoughtful, introspective, halfway academic situation where people came out changed. They came out learning new things. They came out understanding themselves in ways that they didn't previously. And I feel like that is also part of the mission of the book, right?
That's right.
A lot of, like, we've talked about this a lot, that people really struggle with how to define your book. What genre do we put this book in? Is it history? Is it memoir? Is it creative nonfiction? It's like, what is it? And I don't think it needs any of those titles or categorizations. I think the book is what the book is.
Right.
And just like Black people, it contains multitudes. It's all of those things all at once. And I think that's why when people read the book, it is, you know, it's really an experience for them because, number one, they're getting more than what they signed up for, right? They probably come into the book thinking this is going to be this experience for me and I want that experience. And then they end up getting so much more. Same thing for the book tour itself. So I feel like people came, you know, they're interested in the book. They're interested in you. You know, there's something that brought them in there. But what they experienced and what they were a part of was far more vast than what they could have ever expected.
Right. No, I agree. It's been really great because, like, even though I'm exhausted, like, I'm dog tired, like, you know, I understand our elders when they're like, oh my gosh, my feet are barking or like whatever, you know, all the terms. I'm like, oh, I understand those levels of tired now. But these events have been so restorative for that very reason, because I've gone into them and I was very much like, I'm not going to go into these things like some professional writer, right? I want to go into these events like that Black girl from Oakland who's writing this to her mother, that's writing this to her grandmothers and to her aunts and to the church mothers, you know? And that's the earnest way that I chose to move through this book tour. Like, I'm only going to Black bookstores. I'm only talking to Black people. Like, I don't really care what non-Black people think about this book. I couldn't care less, actually.
Right.
And I'm moving in such a way so that, you know, this book will touch as many of those people as possible, as many Black women, as many queer folks, trans folks, disabled folks, folks who look like me and who come from places like me, you know? And I think that was like really resonant for me when I went to Ithaca, because that was where I had the most intimate conversations with people. You know, I had young people walking up to me and like crying and talking about their transitions and their experiences, you know, being genderqueer and all these things. And, you know, I was able to have long conversations with people because it was a more intimate environment. You know, these other book events, it's kind of been like sign the book, hand it off, sign the book, hand it off. And even though it's been more kind of rote in that way, I've still had that intimate environment. Like every single event, you know, I've had a practitioner there to ground the space, to call in the elders, to make sure that we are all on the same accord, you know, and to bring everyone into the space in such a way that we are like able to actually sit with what the book is actually about, right? It's not about me. It's not me. I'm not there to be a star. Right. It's not even there to center me. It's really to center Black women. Like, we need to talk about the Black women. This is just me taking full account, full stock of the effects that Black women have had in my life and showing, trying to show a way to do that in a way that honors them. So, yeah, I've been in New York. I've been to Detroit. I've been all through DC and Baltimore, and I'm about to be in LA. And then I'm heading to Philly. Then I'm being in Chicago for what seems like forever. I'm about to be in Chicago like 3 times. So everybody in Chicago should see me. Nobody in Chicago should complain about anything.
Exactly.
I don't want to hear nothing. Like, I'm about to be in Chicago 3 weekends in a row. Like, pull up. You know what I'm saying? And then I'm still trying to get to the South. Like, I really want to get to like Houston. I'm trying to get to like Decatur. And I'm trying to get to Atlanta proper and, you know, like Raleigh and Durham, you know, so, you know, it's a lot. I want to go where the Black people are, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to get to Black bookstores, indie bookstores, where the Black folk are, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to like no Barnes and Nobles and stuff, you know? Right. And that's hard to do because, you know, you got to call people 4, 5, 6, 7, 90 times, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I'm doing it myself. I'm actually calling people. I'm like writing personal emails. I'm willing to do that to make sure I can go and connect with more Black folks. So, well, it's been dope.
I mean, that's the thing to me is an element of these talks is community building, right? And that's community building just with individual people. It's community building across the country, across state lines with different groups and different people. But also, I think, you know, Black bookstores themselves are a community, right?
Right.
And where those bookstores are located, that is a special place. Mm-hmm. That's a special place, you know, for Black people. Mm-hmm. It's there's an intentionality there that I think is really important. And so you kind of reflecting that same intentionality of saying, hey, I want to do this book tour and I want to do it where the Black people are.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to their communities where they go to buy books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to, and in turn, by having these events there, it's in support of those very bookstores themselves.
That's
right. I want to bring more people into the store so they can obviously buy this book because that'll be good for them. It'll obviously be good for the store itself as well, but also to pick up other books when they walk into a bookstore. I feel like that's one thing about a bookstore is you walk in, you might be thinking, I'm going to buy this one book and walk out.
You always get 2 more.
But you always get something. You always pick up something else. You say, oh, that looks good. Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds amazing. Oh, that's a beautiful cover. Let me look. Right. There's something there's like a childlike joy of exploration that I think bookstores really elicit. And that's what these book events is for as well, is to, you know, just to bring people in to the bookstores. And so what I always tell people is like, if they want to see you, if they want you in their neighborhood, in their hood, you know, call your bookstore.
Call your bookstore.
And say, hey, I would love, I think it'd be really cool.
You got
cool,
Black Women Taught Us?
You know?
Yeah.
Jen will show up.
I will absolutely come. Listen, that's how I came to Detroit. My friend was like, hey, there's this dope Black woman owned bookstore called Source Booksellers, and they would be, they would love to have you. And I was like, bet. I went.
Amazing. I went. Time.
Like, I'll hop on a plane. It's nothing to me. Like, especially if they got a direct flight, I'm there. Like, I have no problem. And I talk about this in the first chapter of Black Women Taught Us too, about like my relationship to books. This is why it's so important to me, is because as a child, you know, I was a voracious reader because my mother was a voracious reader. She would read all the time. And I was exposed to books through my mother. And, you know, if it wasn't for these books that Black women were writing, I wouldn't have been on this journey. I wouldn't be Dr. Jenim Jackson. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have gone and gotten a PhD in poli sci. I wouldn't have had the courage to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I probably would have stayed miserable doing what I was doing. And I think it's really important that we support these indie booksellers, these Black-owned, queer-owned, women-owned booksellers, because we don't have a lot of places to go for this stuff. Like, I couldn't find these books when I was a kid. When I was looking for them, they were out of print, and there weren't a lot of bookstores in my community. Luckily, I had a library card, and I was in there all the time. You know what I'm saying? I knew how to use a library. But, like, you know, folks don't always have access. So we have to keep our bookstores open. So, yes, absolutely. Like, I will come to an indie bookstore. I will have an event. I'll put folks in contact with my publisher so quick. Like, I have an assistant, but I'm a Virgo. So it's intense over here.
So, it's a lot.
It's a lot. But, yeah, I do want to wrap up the tour soon. But I really want to make sure that this book gets in the hands of the people who need it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I feel like it's my responsibility to do the work that's necessary for that to happen.
You can find my mom and dad, aka That Black Couple, on the web at thatblackcouple.com. That Black Couple is owned and operated by Color Combos Media. If you would like to help fund our content, sign up at www.patreon.com/colorcombosmedia. Please consider giving us $5 or $10 per month to help us build our platform and grow our organization. You can also give one-time donations at www.paypal.me/colorcombosmedia. All donations are welcome.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Now let's wrap things up with a reflection.
Okay.
And I wanted to do something a little bit different than we usually do in the reflection today, because it is Women's History Month, and obviously we talked about where we've been, and a big element of that is that you released your book and you're on your book tour.
Yes.
And what I thought would be, I think, a really good touch, is to highlight, well, I guess to talk about women and how important they've been in our lives. But I feel like when it comes to Women's History Month, just like with like Black History Month and, you know, all the history months, right? I feel like we usually spotlight, you know, the same people, or we spotlight people that are celebrities or have, you know, have made, you know, massive, huge contributions to the world that everyone's kind of already aware of. But one thing that you do really, really well in your book is you have all of this information, all this great historical, you know, rich information about these Black women that are really, really important and have done amazing things, right? But you also juxtapose that against, I think, what we call, it's kind of like the closer circle in your life, right?
Yeah.
The actual women who you came into contact with who had real, you know, direct impact on your life.
Sure.
And I just feel like for Women's History Month, you know, I think it would be great to kind of talk about that a little bit more, about, you know, saying those women are making history too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I talk about, you know, people in my close circle, like my mother and my aunts and my grandmothers, but I also talk about people who I've organized with, like Aislinn Pulley in Chicago, or, you know, people who I haven't organized directly with, like Elle Moxley and other folks who are doing incredible work. Like there's a lot of ways that, you know, we can acknowledge the work of Black women, and honor that and elevate it, right? To say, like, you know, we recognize that this work is often done, you know, and invisibilized and not treated with the same respect as, you know, the work that we would consider mainstream, right? This is why social organizing, movement organizing is often looked down upon. People call activists lazy, which is wild because it requires so many skill sets to use simultaneously. And most of those people couldn't organize to save their lives. You know, they couldn't even talk to a room full of people and get them to get up and do the same thing at the same time, you know? And I think that, you know, when I think about the everyday women, right, who just teach you simple lessons, you know, cooking food properly, how to, you know, get your water boiled, you know what I'm saying? Like how to boil an egg, how to wash the dishes right, you know, the systems of things. I remember what my mom taught me, how to like clean the counters off when I wash the dishes and how those things went together. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's weird stuff that doesn't seem that significant, but it becomes a part of your logic, right? It becomes a part of your habits. It becomes a part of who you are and how you learn to navigate the world. And those lessons can be as small as like the routines and chores you do around the house, or as large as how you learn how to navigate police, right? The talk that we have to have about where your hands go and what you're supposed to do if you come in contact with a police officer, and what type of ID you need to have, what needs to be available in your car when you think about what's in your glove box. You know, like, these are all lessons that are about how to survive anti-blackness and white supremacy. And I think people often like diminish them because they don't care about black life, right? Mm-hmm. But when you care about black life and black futurity, you understand how critical those lessons are because they keep black people alive, right? Yeah. And that's really what the book is about. It's all the ways that black women save us. You know, they teach us. And they'll teach themselves right into a grave for us. You know, they'll die 59, 60 years old for us. And then we'll take it for granted. Right. So this book is, you know, black women taught us, is really to say, hey, they taught us, they're teaching us. And it's time that we actually like recognize it and stop putting these women in an early grave.
Wow. That is what it is. And it is really, really powerful. You know, and I can't even name or even remember all of the women who have had impacts on my life, big and small, right? There's a lot of people, like you said, that give you little lessons. Mm-hmm. They say that one thing here or there, or were nice to you that one time, or gave you candy, mm-hmm. you know, like all of these little things, but all of those things, they stack up and they add up.
They're cumulative.
And they, like you said, they kind of build into the fabric of who you are as a person.
That's right.
Right. And I just think for Women's History Month, we have to really kind of draw some attention to that, mm-hmm. and how important that is and how kind of very real that is. Mm-hmm. And that it's not just about, you know, all these big name people, like the person who won an Oscar that one time, mm-hmm. or who made that invention, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? Whatever historical thing that's in the history books that, you know, gets a little bit more attention, than other people's accomplishments. Mm-hmm. But it's the everyday people
who
make those everyday sacrifices and those everyday investments into who we are, into making us be happy and healthy and care for.
That's right. It's the regular, degular, schmegler folk who, they don't have to do something spectacular, mm-hmm. right? Just by keeping black folk alive, just by surviving, just by making sure that black children have a future, that's enough.
Mm-hmm. That's enough.
As always, if you have questions, comments, or concerns, or you just want to tell us how great we are, email us at thatblkcouple@gmail.com. Bye!